The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
What's going on?
The Aes Sedai are returning from battle with the false dragon, parading him through the streets to show the people the dangers of madness and hunger for power. How far a man can...
Sorry, I've got to go.
To the procession? I'll come with you. Just give me a moment to gather my things.
I'll see you out there.
Always in such a rush, these humans. Never taking time to properly prepare for what they're walking into.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Greg.
And I'm Wendy.
And I'm Ben.
And this is House Podcastica, the Wheel of Time edition.
This week, we're covering the Wheel of Time, Season 1, Episode 5, Blood Calls Blood.
This was a little bit different of an episode, more of a centralized storyline, even if all three parties were doing kind of the same thing. Wendy, how'd you feel? General thoughts.
I think we're really delving into the characters in this episode, and I am loving that. I'm already super attached to several of the characters, and we're getting to know them better. And that's what I liked best about this. It had some really dark parts in it.
It definitely had dark parts.
Yeah.
And it dealt with like a lot of emotions that you don't necessarily want to feel if you don't have to.
But like it makes you more connected to them.
It really does. Absolutely.
Yeah.
They did a great job this week of making me feel really attached to a character that did not stay very long.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it was only 2.5 episodes, if that?
I don't even think it was that. I think it was an episode and a half.
Episode and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, actually, yeah, because the first time we saw Stepan was yesterday. The last episode.
last episode, episode four.
When they were doing forms, yeah.
That's pretty masterful, if you think about it. That they made us feel those things.
But, oh, yeah, sorry. I just stole someone's point.
No, you didn't. It's fine.
Okay.
That wasn't your point.
But... Ben, how about you?
I really, Wendy, you're pretty spot on. Like, it really dove deep into characters, and we said goodbye to a couple. We were introduced to one or two new ones, and the stories that we got in just one episode made me attached even more to characters I was already attached to, and really. Really looking forward to finding out even more about some of the ones we've already known since episode one. This was a very character driven episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think that all of the talkie people who, you know, aren't, I mean, and in all honesty, my first time watching this at the end of it, I was kind of like, well, that was a little bit underwhelming. And then on my second watch, I was like, oh, well, this was cool. Like, I know I like that, you know, I like this part, and oh, this is pretty good. And And I realized, then like I looked at my notes and I was like, holy crap, a lot of stuff happened.
Yeah.
Like there are just flashing from one story to another, and how they sequence them. And when I go to, I you know, as I've said before, the first time I watch it, I just kind of soak it in and just initial feels kind of the same way that I would watch like a Walking Dead or whatever, when I'm not analyzing it deeply or whatever. That's why I have podcasts I listen to. But yeah, when I got into it and I like looked at all of the stuff that had happened, I was like, oh man, like there was a ton of stuff in this one. And as you guys said, most of it was driven to make us connect more with the characters. And so, yeah, that's,
And I feel sweet. Like, as weird as it may seem, like this is only episode 5, but there are only 3 episodes left.
That's crazy.
So at the same time, while it was a very character-driven episode, it also felt like, okay, they're reeling everything in because they're bringing everybody back together.
Mm-hmm.
So there, while it's a very character-driven, very emotional episode, it also, you can also tell in some ways, it's like, okay, we're gearing up now to head towards the end game. The end game of this particular chapter right. of the story.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like, I know that the negative connotation to the phrase setup episode, but I feel like they did a really good job in making it a setup episode and like getting everybody back together, for the most part. But also utilizing that time to do things and to make us connected to those characters. So,
mm-hmm.
Okay. So moving into the top 3 highlights for Blood Calls Blood. What do you got, Wendy? Number 3.
So my number 3 is the torture scenes with Child Valda. This guy is just a creepy fuck. You know, his smiling and his kind of jovial banter, and yet he's got a knife and he's flaying Perrin. The juxtaposition between those things are just awful. And every time I see him, I flinch. And I'm like, what is going to happen here? It was almost too much for me, the them showering Egwene, which mm-hmm. is such a violation, and you could just see the pain that she was going through. And they removed her braid, which she has had intact since the ceremony in the very first episode. And like, why? Why did they have to wash her and put her in a white gown? I think it's just part of the torture, like to take you out of your element. And I had a little trouble watching all of that. When they were flaying Perrin, when Child Valda was flaying Perrin, his eyes glowed gold. What does that mean? Is he a werewolf? Are there going to be sparkly vampires in this? I need
Please
to know.
No. Please no.
I can neither confirm nor deny sparkly vampires.
Perrin finally tells someone about Layla, and I thought that was really important and good that we finally heard him talk about it. And I loved that Egwene, like, thought he might die there. I think she thought that Child Valda might kill him there, and she wanted him to die knowing that it wasn't his fault and that he was a good person.
So I read that differently. I read that as, you are going to spend the rest of your long life, you know, learning that you did nothing wrong, because I'm going to be the one that dies, and then you're going to get let go. You're going to spend the rest of your life figuring that out.
I don't think she had accepted that either one of them was going to die, because she was still fighting. But I do think she probably thought it was possible that one of them was going to die. And she wanted him to know that you know, what happened was an accident, and that didn't make him a bad person. I loved that. You could see how those two had become close over the last couple episodes, and I thought that was really good. And then I thought Egwene tricked Child Valda. She was, like, channeling a small burst at him, while really she was concentrating on burning Perrin's ropes. And, you know, why was this... Why did that come as a surprise to Child Valda? He seemed very unprepared for her to have any powers, although that was what he was trying to elicit in her. And he saw the gold eyes of Perrin, and he seemed really shocked at that. You could see he said, "What are you?" And then they both attack Child Valda together. So I'm assuming Egwene saw the gold eyes as well. And then were either of you screaming double tap? Because I was. I was like, no, keep stabbing him until there's nothing left.
So I what it looked like is that she stabbed him in the shoulder and then the knife got stuck because he was trying to pull it out when he was on the ground.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can understand where you're coming from.
Was like, no, keep killing him. Keep stabbing him. And then, I wanted them to make sure he was dead, but of course he's going to live. And then the wolves helped. At first I thought those were the gypsies' dogs, but I think that was the pack of wolves, right?
That was the wolves, yeah.
Yeah. Helped to save them, which was super handy.
Yeah, very, very convenient. I did think that the violence of the wolf attack, while not quite some other shows, as far as they go in other shows, they definitely had some pretty severe, some pretty gory portions of that. Although, as you mentioned, you'd already literally just watched someone be stripped and
flayed like a ham.
Well, not just Perrin, but like Egwene being stripped. Like it reminded me of Shawshank Redemption and 12 Monkeys, where they're naked and just scrubbing them down to remove any contaminants or whatever.
Yeah.
It was definitely an, you know, like I talked about the last couple episodes. Like I was like, oh, okay. So now this to me is the most interesting thing that's happening. I definitely liked that storyline the best this week.
Yep. Well, that's actually my number three as well. And I wanted to say is that all it took was a little conflict to make me finally interested in the Tinker story, because I haven't been interested in that story for the past two episodes. It's been kind of boring. We talked about that last episode where, you know, that was the only storyline of the three that we had last episode where nothing happened. All we got was the tale of the leaf. And that was really all we got. This week, you throw in a little conflict, and I'm finally interested in that story, even though it ended with that conflict because they ran away from the Tinkers. So they're no longer with the Tinkers any longer. And, you know, we fast forward to Child Valda keeping Egwene and Perrin as, you know, as captured and trying to force Egwene to conjure. But one of the things I did take notice of, especially more upon my second viewing, is that the angrier Perrin got as he was being held, there were wolf howls in the background.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you took notice of that, Wendy. Other than even before his eyes went yellow, there were wolf howls in the background every time he got upset or angry.
And at the end, he sounded like a wolf.
Yeah, I mean, when he broke out, I thought some crazy shit was going to go down. Crazy shit did, but I thought it was going to be more involving him.
Well, I mean, as... and And we've seen foreshadowing of this, of something like this coming since the beginning. I mean, we had the first scene in episode 2 where they were licking his wounds and then walked off. We had the next time when the wolves were leading them towards the direction that they needed to go by chasing them in that direction. But in essence, they were helping them. And then now we have this where they're literally being called upon, possibly by Perrin in some way, that when they're when he's angry, they're angry. And then they come in and they take out the rest of the Children of the Light so that they can escape. So it's almost like there is a connection between Perrin and these wolves.
Absolutely.
What that is yet, or how deep it goes, we're still trying to figure out. We're still waiting.
I look forward. Yeah. Is he going to turn into a fucking wolf? Like, you know, Wendy's werewolf theory.
Well, and what does... Why is that happening? Is that something to do with the Trollocs? Because it seemed to come from a wound that he had on his leg? Like, that's what I don't know.
Well, we're
we'll find out. I mean, I anxiously await them. Hopefully we get some sort of explanation or something by the end of the season. I don't need it to be, hey, problem solved, but I do want to get something besides, well, that happened. So cool.
Yeah. We still have 3 episodes left. I have no doubt in some way this will be resolved and we'll know what this connection is.
And it's something rare because Child Valda didn't know what it was. So
even still, like, it's, I don't know if this is something that happened because the wolf licked his wounds. I think this was something that already existed. And because as we're finding out, all 5 of these people, they're all, even though only one of them is the dragon, they are all special in some sort of way.
Yeah.
Because they're all exhibiting abilities of some kind.
Yep.
So they might have only been normal people when they were at Two Rivers, but now they're all realizing that there is something about each and every one of them that was always lying dormant and is now starting to come to the surface.
And funnily enough, you know, I think that had the children caught any of them, they would have, like, all of them have weird shit going on with them. If it's Matt and the shit coming from his mouth or whatever.
Or the fact that he could knock down a door that three men couldn't.
Or that Rand has super strength and, you know, when he's under stress.
Oh, Rand, sorry, yeah.
Or, you know, or Nynaeve, you know, heals literally everybody in a cave. but because of the very narrow view of the Children of the Light, or at least specifically Valda, he believes that all of those things would be agents of the dark. And so, like, it, you know, fortunately, this one was, wolves were able to help out and save, Perrin and Egwene, and we're able to get them back together, get the band back together in Tar Valon.
Well, it also seems too that Child Valda, it almost seems like his purpose of hunting the Aes Sedai and taking out the Aes Sedai isn't necessarily for the greater good of anyone else. It almost seems like he does it purposely just to have a trophy that he did it. I mean, why? Because otherwise, why take the collection of rings?
Well,
he's keeping a trophy of some kind.
His phrase, and I believe it's a quote. If it's not, it's a closely paraphrased quote. The idea that the one power comes from anywhere but the dark is absurd. I have been called to stamp out the one power, woman by woman by woman. So he feels that it is his calling to destroy these dark friends, these agents of the Dark One, which happen to be literally every Aes Sedai out there. And that is his duty and his calling.
Well, that's probably also why he was a bit shocked when he saw some kind of ability from Perrin.
Yeah.
Because
he wasn't expecting him to be a threat. Yeah.
He's so hyper focused on watching women for abilities that when he sees one coming from a man, it kind of threw him off a little bit.
right, and this isn't one of my points or anything, but just the way that you just said that, you know, not so busy watching women and not expecting it from a man, that tosses me to the Leandrin Moraine conversation where Leandrin said, you know, in some places in the world, men still rule and don't treat little girls who show a spark to be better than they could be or better than them. They don't treat them well or something like that. And kind of what Wendy was talking about last week, I believe, where it's, you know, here it is, you know, girl power, and that's a lot of what we've seen. However, in other parts of the world, it's still that that concept that women are still only around to serve men or to serve, period, rather than to rule or help rule.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to figure out who's the good guy and who's the bad guy in this show, because like the Aes Sedai, you can see they're not like these noble characters that are just doing good for good's sake. You can see there's a lot of flaws and faults there, so it doesn't make it clear who's right and who's wrong here, which it's makes it like all the more interesting.
It's almost like every character is a yin yang.
Yeah.
Because while some of them have the best intentions, there's a little bit of nefarious or darkness in them. And the same thing goes the other way. It goes the other way as well.
Yeah, that was good stuff. My number three is I'm gonna shift a little bit. A new character. Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Halon, the Ogier. I will tell you, for 20 some odd years, I said Ogier, like with O-G, Loyal the Ogier. I really enjoyed his interactions with Rand. And some of the things that he said. Now, Loyal talks, and he talks a lot, and he talks at length, and he talks even though no one's listening. So he is an Ogier. An Ogier. He comes from a Steading, which is exactly what Dana said in episode 2. She said, I want to visit an Ogier, I think she said Ogier Steading. He, you know, was chased across Tar Valon, by a mob with pitchforks. Ogier have access to the grounds. And so he's almost like a deus ex machina. We're like, oh, well, Rand can't go to the White Tower to find his friends, but he's described this braid. And so I'm going to go and I'm going to speak very eloquently and at great length until people just stop listening and give me whatever it is that I want. And I love the pacing of the actor's delivery, and it's a lot of fun to me.
I don't know if it's just me, but I got very I got a couple Hagrid vibes from Loyal.
Okay.
From Harry Potter,
mm-hmm.
especially when he said like he's allowed on the grounds of the White Tower. I was like, well, that's pretty much what Hagrid did. Hagrid was a groundskeeper. Not saying that's what Loyal was, but
right.
You know, like it just for some reason that particular line was like, oh, it gives me Hagrid vibes.
Yeah, he was only I think the fact that he was giant and very hairy, I can understand that.
There's that too. Yeah,
but like I loved all of the little, not pieces of necessarily of like book lore or whatever, but you know, oh, you are an Aielman. Not often do I meet an Aielman. I did not expect to meet. Oh, I'm not an Aielman. I'm from the Two Rivers. Oh, an Aielman who's from the Two Rivers. I'm not an Aielman. And an Aielman who is from the Two Rivers who says he's not an Aielman. So odd. I mean, like, and he just continues to talk and talk and talk, and it's almost like he's narrating everything that's going on, and I find that endearing for right now. I may not find it endearing if I had to be around him all the time, and but I thought that the delivery and the introduction of the character, he almost looks like the Cowardly Lion from Wizard of Oz, but like, you know, he's wearing boots and he seems to have a great love of books, and I am looking forward to seeing more of Loyal.
I had a note about him. I wrote that I really liked him. I thought he was funny and ironic. And this is a really serious show, and there's not a lot of light moments. And he brought some, like, a breath of fresh air and some light moments, and I thought that was really needed. I thought it was interesting. Rand, like, kind of dismisses him and his importance, and then he easily, like, finds Nynaeve for him and just drags her in. Yeah. I thought it was great.
Yeah, he was definitely like, so we didn't have the standard Matt sass, that, because Matt's just feeling real shitty, and then, as you mentioned, like, a lot of heaviness at other parts of the episode, but yeah, I could totally appreciate what you're saying. That's basically how I felt. I think that he is someone who was introduced around this point in the books. And I, like I said, I look forward to finding out more about this version of them, and the characters. So, or the race of Ogier.
Yeah.
Wendy, number two.
My number two was about the warders. I think I've talked about previously that I found them really fascinating. This episode seemed to be very focused on the warders again. I think it's probably the most compelling part of the story for now. Steppen, he's completely wrecked at the loss of the Aes Sedai, Kareni. He tells the story of how they met and how he became her warder, which was just so sweet and compelling. And we really see so much feeling here. And certainly these strong, amazing men seem to be able to share their feelings and their troubles with each other. They're supportive of each other. You can see they're true friends. And they're showing a lot more emotion than we're used to seeing in most shows. And in real life in many instances as well. I love that this show is kind of breaking the stereotypes and kind of twisting typical gender portrayals that we see in shows. And I really like that. If anything, the women have been more sedate and not showing their feelings, and the men have been showing their feelings. And I just love the role reversal. The scene between Lon and Steppen when they're in his chambers, and I think Lon is staying with him because he knows it's a painful time to be alone, and I think also fearful, and I thought it was just so sweet and wonderful, them talking and sharing memories. You can tell how much they really care about each other. But really, we find out that Steppen has tricked. He has tricked Nynaeve, and he's tricked Lon, and he ends up drugging Lon so that he can be left alone to take his own life. And I think you said it earlier, is that we didn't know him very well, but we still felt that tragedy and the heartbreaking to lose him. And Lon's despair was just so palpable. I'm so invested in Lon at this point. They have shaped his quiet character so well. And I think him and Nynaeve are probably the characters I am the most invested in at this point.
Daniel Henney, like, that last scene was just heart wrenching.
It really was.
And he sold it. And I mean, in all honesty, Moraine or Rosamund Pike, and just the look on her face, and like just the like, and just what I think of the bond, right? And I get that I have some, you know, some other viewpoint of it, but the way I think of the bond is that you almost can feel like a separate portion of yourself, right? So let's just, we'll call it chi, right? And you can feel the other person's chi. And if they're upset, you can feel that they're upset. And then, you know, if they're drinking, then maybe you feel a little bit drunk. But the hard part there is that where you could, what it seemed like to me was that Moraine was watching Lan, and as his sorrow grew, or at least he allowed himself to feel the sorrow, she, like, her sorrow for him, like, she felt worse for him, and then that reflected back to Lan, and it just bounced back and forth until it was just immeasurable. And that's one of the ways that Lan was, you know, but he couldn't do anything except for howl in the grief. That's just the way that I looked at it. And the tear rolling down Rosamund Pike's face, just as she just isn't blinking, staring at Lan, and you could just see the sorrow in her face, and
amazing performance for both of them.
Yeah, it was. It was tough. And I think that's why I didn't like those scenes as much, because I don't want to feel that. Like, I get it, I understand it. I don't like it. I don't want to feel bad.
I like. I mean, I do,
but like I appreciate what's happening. But I've been through heavy grief.
I feel like in some ways it lets you feel your own stuff, you know, like feeling that through them. I loved it. When something makes me feel, it's doing its job. It's good.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just I don't like to. It's not that I don't like to feel grief, or, you know, I mean, I don't like to feel shitty, but, you know, for me personally, I think that there was a base emotion there that made me not dislike those parts, but go, oh, let me concentrate on this guy getting tortured, because I don't have to think about how this would make me feel if I was in that position, or I had not prevented my friend's death, or something like this. Could absolutely be triggering for someone whose, you know, family members or friends had, you know, committed suicide or tried or whatever. And, all right, that's all I'll say about that. But it was definitely difficult to watch.
Well, I mean, and, you know, to kind of further the point, not about the end scene, but about the warders and their connection to the Aes Sedai. You know, I've been saying for the past couple episodes, that's something that has really been intriguing me lately. And there was a line that Lan said in this episode that really, I didn't really pick up on it until the second watch. Like, I heard it the first watch, but it really struck me the second time. And that's, warders are not supposed to outlive their Aes Sedai. And, you know, when you look at that in real life, you know, there's a very common saying that, you know, parents are not supposed to outlive their children.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And, you know, I kind of made that connection the same way. It's like, while I don't think a warder and an Aes Sedai's connection is more like a parent and a child, I said last week, I think it's more like a marriage, but just not of the intimacy.
Right.
Or without the intimacy. And I feel like that's the way, you know, this connection really is. So, I mean, you have, you know, when you realize that warders are warriors, Aes Sedai are kind of like are the magicians, or whatever you want to call them. It does make a lot of sense that a warder would go before an Aes Sedai. And Wendy, you kind of touched base on it a little bit too, when you mentioned the connection between, Stepan and why can't I think
of Karine?
Karine, yeah. You know, when he's telling the story of how they met, like, you realize even more, and this is one of the things that really makes you feel for Stepan as a character in just the short time that we got to know him. You know, it makes you realize that, like, okay, their bond, I think, was even stronger than what we know of Lan and Moraine, because we don't really know much of their connection other than they're just warder and Aes Sedai. But when you hear the story of Stepan, their bond predates the actual warder Aes Sedai bond.
Right.
You know, they were friends, almost family, before they even became connected.
I think that we will hopefully find out that many warders and Aes Sedai have similar stories. I don't think that it's going to turn out. I think just because of the personal nature of Stepan's story, I think we're going to find out that it's not like, oh, hey, I'm going to go find the most able-bodied warder or guy and I'm going to make him my warder. But yes, you're absolutely right. The personalized level of that definitely impacted. And I'm not sorry to cut you off. It just,
No, it's fine. I mean, I have no doubt there are Aes Sedai out there who chose their warders because they are the most apt. They are the most highly skilled. You know, they are the most well-trained. But I do find it more intriguing that, because even Stepan says, like, she had her choice of anybody. And she chose me. He was literally a kid that liked to pick fights and picked a fight against the wrong person, that being her. You know, and he, like, I love the fact that the story says, like, oh, and after, like, basically after she whooped my ass, she bought me a drink. Like, that's a great connection to have, and that really is what helped me buy into the character and really made me feel his loss when the time came at the end.
Absolutely.
Is that personalized connection.
All right. That it for your number two, Wendy?
Yep.
Well, we kind of touched on my number two already, or rather you did, Greg, and that is we've met somebody who I kind of feel very quickly became one of my favorite characters. And that's Loial the
Ogier.
Ogier. But I kind of looked at his character a little differently in that, like, he does absolutely like to talk. And I did mention I got the Hagrid vibes from him. And he does like to talk. And maybe the first time I watched the episode, I was like, yeah, I get it. You like to talk. You're constantly talking. And it's so funny that nobody ever cuts him off. They just move on to right. What they need to do. And he's like, all right, yep. I guess I'm done. But the more I listened to him upon second watch, I kind of equate him almost to a Gleeman. Because he's not just rambling. He's giving you a history in whatever it is he's talking about. Like when he mentioned, you know, when he's talking about Two Rivers, he's giving you a history of what he knows of Two Rivers. He's giving you a history of what he knows about this person, what he knows about this person. He's a historian. And I didn't even notice it until the second time that when Rand is in the library searching through the books, Loial's already in there. You see his feet. Sitting in the chair behind the book stack. See, it wasn't like he just kind of wandered in and happened upon Rand. He was in there the whole time.
I didn't even hear you come in.
Yeah. But you're right. The delivery of the character, it's so, I don't want to say dry, because it's certainly not dry, but it's kind of monotone, but it has some character. I don't know what it is about Loial, but I loved his character. I want to see more of this character. Because he is an Ogier, I want to see him fight. Like, I know he knows.
Well, so in the books, you know, see, he talked about being chased across the city with pitchforks and torches. But in the books, basically people refer to him as a Trolloc. Because no one's seen a Trolloc before, and they see this person or this humanoid that is larger than life and looks like he's part beast. And, you know, although he's, you know, wearing boots and clothes and not eating other people. it is very apparent that he is like, almost like, oh, that was quite the experience. Pacing's not the right word, but I love the almost like the poetic delivery of the way that he talks, because he never hurries himself up, no matter if someone stops listening or if someone moves on or even leaves the room.
He just continues.
I really enjoyed it, and it made me, these humans are so hasty, always running off before they're prepared for what they're getting ready to walk into.
Which makes you think that he's a pretty prepared guy.
Yeah, so he's always going to be prepared. Now, you may not necessarily need him to help put out a fire. I am curious what happens when an Ogier is faced with conflict. If he has to...
That's what I mean.
You're absolutely right. That's... Yeah, I totally digging him, and he's a very interesting character in the first book.
It's been weird too how there has been these characters that have just stood out and immediately caught my attention. You know, Tom being another one that I just immediately took to, and now there's Loyal, who's another one that is just I immediately took to, and it. For definitely different reasons. Like, Tom is absolutely a mystery. I want to know his backstory. I want to know why he is the person that he is. And I'm saying is because I fully believe Tom is absolutely still alive. There's no doubt in my mind he's dead. Like, he's still alive. It's the typical trope. If you didn't see it happen,
you didn't see it on screen death. You didn't see him ripped apart by in a revolving door. Yeah, he's not dead.
Yes. So, you know, Tom is just a mystery to me, which is why I was drawn to him. But Loyal, like, he's not a mystery. He's very, just like the books he reads, he's very open. At least from what we've seen of him so far. And that's kind of what draws me into him a little bit more. So, yeah, I really took to that character. I enjoyed him even more the second time, and when they leave the White Tower, I hope he joins the party. I really do.
Yeah, but that just makes me... You say when they leave the White Tower, it makes me wonder, what's next? Rand's question to Moraine, what then?
Yep.
Sorry, that moves on from that point, but...
Yeah, because I have some... It's not one of my top three, but I have a note on that as well. But the whole comparison to Trollocs that you made, too, makes a lot of sense, because the first thing that Rand does when he sees him is he draws his sword. So it's kind of off-putting. But I get it. But yeah, that's my number two. We kind of touched on it already. I just wanted to just throw a couple extra notes.
I'm going to talk about some of the stuff that is touched on book references that... They're literally just tossed in and, you know, maybe talked about a little bit, but then hopefully they are things that will come up in the future. Tarvalon was a beautifully realized city. Like the views, and we've talked about the money and the CGI that was put together and the quality of it. Like that view from Matt and Rand up on the hill before, when they first saw the city and the tower and in the middle of the river, and it was absolutely stunning.
I was actually going to ask you about that, because I know you, having read the books multiple times, seeing the physical realization of it come to life, did it meet your expectations?
The city, sure. The city was, I think that I think that, you know, Game of Thrones did it well with King's Landing and whatnot. But I thought that the view away or view from away was great. The overall view, the White Tower, I honestly, in my mind, I had built it up like, almost like the Washington Monument. Like it was literally a straight up and up into the air tower, like a spire.
Yep. That's what I pictured too.
As, instead of a what looks like the Capitol, like, but I thought that it was
almost like the Eye of Sauron, just white without the eye.
Yeah, yeah. That's basically what I had in my head, and then seeing this, it makes more sense for it to be like this rather than just a spire. I thought that it was absolutely beautiful. Another point on the scenery when Lan, right before Lan is waking up after Stepan has drugged him, like the townscape or the cityscape or where you saw the sunrise and the changing of colors on the storefronts or the buildings. I mean, that looked like it was ripped directly from the covers of the books. Because I know that we've talked about a lot of the colors, you know, the show being very colorful, but this was, I thought that the purple and red hues were absolutely, like, absolutely stunning and beautiful.
I agree. I had a note about this. It had a real feel of like Morocco or the Middle East. The few long shots that they showed were really amazing. I thought they did an amazing job with the effects. I don't know how they did it, but I thought it was great. You can see the stone arched bridges, the architecture, the latticed windows, the open air markets and courtyards, a real Middle East feel, but yet the people in the town are very diverse, so you're seeing all different kinds of things. You're seeing camels and horses. There's a stone wall surrounding the entire city. I thought it was great. It certainly exceeded my expectations.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. The colors remind me of, so when I was in middle school, we put on a play of Oklahoma, and you know what, maybe, you know, if it was middle school, high school, whatever the case was, in Oklahoma, there is a scene where the sun starts to set, and I was involved in like the technical lighting and stuff like that. And so a friend of mine, she was the lighting director for the play. And like, I just watched the sky, like the background. I wasn't even paying attention to the people singing or dancing or whatever. I was paying attention to the lights, and it did almost the exact same type of thing where it would just fade from one, like slowly fade from one color to another. And it was absolutely stunning, and it was all background, not intended to be a focus of the time or the play or whatever. And I thought, but it made me appreciate what like how the lighting and whatnot will affect your mood or the way you feel about a specific area or a specific scene or whatever. I thought it was so well done. The other part was that we saw the Aielman, and Tom mentioned that you don't see that color of hair on the Aielman in the cage when he buried him with Matt. And then Loial. So you have to imagine that Tom, when he saw Rand, thought the same thing. And then Loial comments on the fact that Rand looks like an Aielman. And Rand has zero concept of what he's talking about. Aiel are just monsters, not monsters, but, you know, fearsome warriors from the stories. And yeah, I thought, and that was, I think that was the last, oh no, the last one was the little ceremony that Stefan was doing the night before, before he died, warding off the Forsaken. And Lan said, "Do you really believe in any of this stuff?" Or rather, that's what Stefan asked Lan, and Lan was like, "Hey, they were sealed away with the Dark One. You know, who's to say if they can touch the world or not?" And the Forsaken play a significant part later in the story, and at least in the story in the books. And I am hoping to see them, and I hope to see that in the future. But it was just tossed in there with zero concept of what it was, except for the short explanation that Lan gave. I thought it was great.
Is an Aielman, is that like the modern equivalent of a ginger?
Of a ginger?
Yeah.
Yeah, if gingers didn't happen from time to time.
Okay. More rare.
Apparently in this world, that color, gingers from, or basically you don't see them outside of the Aiel Waste, the threefold land. It is uncommon to see that.
Well, I think that also, the one thing we haven't mentioned about that whole interaction between the two of them, and you know, Loial calling him an Aielman and Rand saying that he wasn't, is it's kind of shining a light on the fact that Rand doesn't know his true background. I think it just raises some questions about what is Rand's true background. Is there something that Tam isn't telling him about where he's from, or,
gotcha,
you know, anything like that?
Okay.
Because Loial was pretty dead set.
You're definitely an Aielman. No. Who says you're not an Aielman? That's weird. I like weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that is a good point. And then Valda said, and Aes Sedai said that all of the motions and stuff from the hands were actually just crutches. That all you needed to do was like concentrate your efforts, but all the motions and stuff are just stuff that people insert into their thing. So that if they don't do them, they can't work the One Power. I thought that's something directly out of the books, which I thought was pretty cool. And that is all I had for my number two. Wendy?
So for my number one, it really is just all about Nynaeve. She's such a wonderful character. The more we see of her, the more I love. When she finds the boys, Rand and Perrin, you can see her motherly instincts really kick in. She feels responsible for them, and that is her priority. And I don't know, there's just something that comes over her that I don't think we saw enough of her in the first episode to get a full feel of her. But here you can really see it. Like, she's mothering them. And she's also strong enough and stubborn enough to stand up to Moraine and the Aes Sedai. Like I said, I think Lan and Nynaeve are my favorite characters so far. Stepan is the first to say that there's something between Lan and Nynaeve. What do you think about that?
I think there's definitely a connection between the two. I don't know if it stems to romantic, but there's a bond there.
I look forward to seeing that explored more in the future.
I like them together. I would love to see something. I can't wait to see what happens. That I really, they've just built it up so well that you care so much about these characters. At Stepan's funeral, you can see Nynaeve watching Lan's despair. And you can see how much it affects her, and she's trying really hard. I mean, their emoting and their acting was just so well done in this episode. And you can see she's trying to be strong. She doesn't trust these people. She certainly doesn't want to let her guard down in front of them, but she can't stop herself. She's really shaken by how much this has affected Lan.
Yeah, she definitely like started fidgeting, just like, wait, I don't know, but why I can't, but Yeah, and, but with zero words and
yeah.
all in the eyes and in the face.
Yep.
And it was great.
So I just can't wait to see what happens with her. And this was somebody who, after the first episode, I just kind of wrote her off. Like, she's gone. She's dead, obviously. She's dead. And so it's been a real treat and gift to see her being built up into such an important main character each episode. And I felt more and more strong about her. So loving it.
Yeah. Speaking of Nynaeve, I love the fact that each of these characters are still being like touch-toned. Like, hey, we're touching this person's story and their interactions, even if it's just a short little whatever. Even, you know, Nynaeve was more featured in this, even if it was just more conversations and not crazy one power explosions. It was the fact that, like, in this and like last episode, Nynaeve like kind of sat with the warders and bonded and whatnot, and then giant reveal that she can use the power. And in this one, it was Egwene showing the backbone and really basically telling Valda to go fuck himself. And I thought it was just super impressive. I guess you could say that that like Matt and Rand's episode was the Breen Spring episode.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's, we're just like, what the hell's going on with Perrin? Like, some crazy shit. And I like the fact that we're using each episode to kind of break out a specific character. We don't necessarily just focus on them, but you're seeing aspects of their personality, just like you were talking about earlier, the character building. I love it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, the story of Egwene and Perrin, it's almost like the writers had them lying in wait because they needed to tell a couple other stories first, and then this episode it's like, okay,
yeah, now that's actually a really good point, because I just spent the last two episodes going, what the hell, come on, just something happened. But if stuff had happened, it might have taken away from the story from the other characters,
could have gotten overshadowed by another story that was being told at the same
time. Yeah, absolutely.
Before I move on to my number one, going back to the whole Lan and Nynaeve connection, I think it would be interesting to see, because I definitely, like I said, I don't know if I see a romantic bond. I could be completely wrong about that. I could definitely see a warder Aes Sedai bond happening if that's the path that, you know, Nynaeve takes. Unfortunately, though, what we learn from this episode, though, from, you know, Stepan, is that that would unfortunately mean Moraine has to die in order for that bond to be broken for him to take
Except Moraine talked about finally, like, hearing that there was a way to release the bond.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it was when she was talking to Alana in Moraine's bedchamber. She was like, Alana was like,
there's a way to break the bond.
And then Alana was like, oh, you're going to be around for a long time.
So maybe that's something they quite possibly could be setting up then, is that Lan could possibly go to Nynaeve instead of Moraine.
The problem is that if you can release the bond, but I don't know if that would have the same effect. Like, would kind of like what Stepan was talking about, like, hey, you lose Moraine, then tell me how easy it is to just jump to another woman.
I think, but when he said something like that, though, I think I'm pretty sure he meant
maybe death. I just don't know what the loss of that closeness and that intimacy would do to someone to just have them replaced by somebody.
The disconnect, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point.
Fair enough. Yeah, I could, like I said, there's a couple different things I could see they might be setting up with it. It's just a question of how are they going to go about doing it. My number one, I kind of want to jump back and talk a little bit more about the funeral that we saw at the end. I know kind of every one of my points has been taken this episode. And I'm just kind of throwing additional notes at them. No, it's totally fine.
I think you should go first next time, Beth.
I'm fine with it. Because I do have some additional points on the funeral. And one of the things that I noticed about this episode is that funerals bookend this episode. We haven't spoken much about the funeral that starts the episode with the burial of Karine and everybody else that was killed in the battle that we saw last episode. And one of the things that really stood out to me is that one of the people buried ceremoniously was the king, who was against them. And we see that it's Lan that's the one that's laying the king to rest, which speaks volumes about Lan, because that means he has a massive amount of respect for whether it be royalty or the ceremony of death. Because, you know, the king was somebody who went mad and turned against them, but yet you still find him laying him to rest.
I wonder if all of those bodies were not just their party, but the people who died that they killed.
There were a lot of bodies.
Yeah. So
there was probably 30, 40 bodies there.
So yeah, maybe the number of people who got killed were much, much higher than that. I don't know. But I feel like they were burying literally everyone who died and, you know, giving them the wish of the last embrace of the mother, welcome you home. Which I thought was, yeah.
Well, and that's another point I kind of wanted to bring up too, was the dynamic between the two different funerals. You know, we had the funeral in the beginning with the final embrace of the mother, which, you know, involved a member, if not multiple members of the Aes Sedai that had, I think Karine was the only Aes Sedai that was killed.
There might have been a Red Sister, but I think that they would have made a bigger deal of it, of like the delivery of the ring back to the tower, if there was.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we have this serene, you know, very, in some ways, very beautiful ceremony where they're covered with a cloth with one single candle laid upon them. And then that's how they're buried, as compared to Stepan's funeral, which almost seemed more like a warrior funeral with the pounding of the chest and Lan screaming out, because it's even the other member that says to Lan, lay your hand upon him and release us of this grief. So Lan is the one that is ceremoniously and representing the grief that everyone in the room suffered. And the pounding of the chest is almost like a warrior cry, because it's we are experiencing grief, but as warriors, we cannot let it affect us, so we're going to pound it out of us. And that is what I felt Lan's scream really was. Mm. He was releasing the grief because they need to move on.
Makes sense. Ugh.
And I will fully confess this. I haven't read any of the feedback. That's not what I'm confessing. I never read the feedback until we read it on the podcast. So I don't know if this gets brought up at all in anybody's feedback. I will fully confess this. Both times I watched this episode, I got choked up during that final
scene. Oh, yeah.
I get it.
And I know the moment that it happened. I got choked up. I started to feel like it was coming when I saw, we mentioned the performances of Rosamund Pike and seeing her cry. And I absolutely agree that that is her sharing the feeling of Lan because of their bond. She is absolutely feeling his grief in that moment. And it's kind of reflecting back and forth, as you said, Greg. So seeing her start to pound her chest was when I was like, okay, this is going to hit me. Like, I don't know why this is going to hit me. This is going to hit me. When it really got me was seeing Nynaeve and seeing her get emotional at Lan. When it cut to her and you see her eyes welling up, that's when mine did too. I don't know what it is about that moment. That's the moment I started getting choked up at that funeral. because it's so, again, it's a character we've only known for an episode and a half. But the story that they gave us of that character in that short of time to make us feel connected to them, I felt like I lost somebody too,
right,
in a sense. So I got very emotional at that funeral, which is bravo on the writer's part.
Acting and writing was just top notch.
Yep. Everybody's performance was great.
Amazing.
The writing was great. That funeral scene was just... But again, it's just, I find it interesting too, comparing the differences between the two funerals.
Yeah, that's the about all these things that I don't want to sit and think about. we're sitting and thinking. Yeah, no, I like just hearing you talk about it. It flashes me back to the scene, and I don't. Yeah, you know, I get it, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, that's really all I have from a number one too, is just the emotion from that funeral and the dynamic between the two that bookended the episode.
Yeah, that's a hard one to think about. But so moving on. Number one. Wendy kinda touched on this, and you guys touched it on your number threes, but I care about Perrin and Egwene again. And things happened, and the psychosis of Valda and the ballsiness of Egwene. You know what? If you're going to do it, just do it. I will come back and split you like a pig in my next life.
She's a badass too, man.
I cannot wait for her to realize the full, like realize her potential, to become an Aes Sedai. Or I guess they will start off as novices, and you get a little bit more of that in those little animated things we talked about last week. Did you go back and watch those, Wendy? Okay, so
I did not.
You should. It'll take you 15 minutes to get through all of them, and you should.
Yeah, I will.
They're really, really good.
I kind of like having everything come to me like with no, you know, spoilers or preconceived notions. I've been enjoying that.
So they're only releasing them now. I guess maybe the White Tower one. It's basically like, hey, the White Tower one was the one that was released this episode there this week. But the White Tower one, I think, was closer to hey, here's the history of the White Tower. And why the White Tower is important. We've talked about how famous it is and how all roads lead there, even if roads don't work that way. But this is like what this is where how it came into existence and stuff like that. So I think they work to avoid spoilers. That's one of the reasons that I encourage you guys to look at them, because they are one, they're fantastically rendered and really well done. So Abdul Salis is just killing it.
He's killing it in that role, so
just vile and psychotic and creepy. We can't figure out who the bad guys are. No, that guy's a bad guy, like straight up. And he's supposed to represent the light, and that is such a crazy juxtaposition that you would think that is, you know, hey, I am, we'll just say that he is, as we've talked about, kind of the Spanish Inquisition, like, hey, I am representing the Lord, and the Lord wants me to root out all evil, and because I have my own personal faulted view of as man, I view you as evil, and God, we have found our Ramsay Bolton.
He's a zealot. He's absolutely a zealot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, he has one purpose, and it's to rid the world of the Aes Sedai. Doesn't matter how he's going to be going about doing it. Even if the matters are extreme or uncompromising, he's going to go about doing
it. But when he said, how do you know that I'm not a man, or that I'm a man who will keep to my oaths, when Egwene said you can't kill someone who's done it. Well, who are you to think that I will keep to my oaths? I was just like, That's even more hardcore. Good God.
I hate him. I wanted him to
double
die,
tap. So, double yeah. tap.
I was very invested in his death. Kill him again. Pick up the knife and keep stabbing.
No, you know he's going to survive.
Yes, I know. He's creepy. Like, his mixture of, like, I don't know, like, comedy Arsenio Hall. And yet what comes out is, like, Ramsay Bolton. Like, it's fucking creepy.
It is absolutely.
Wendy has dropped the F-bomb twice this episode.
I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I'm
not sorry.
I love it.
Sorry, not sorry. yeah, it was, he was absolutely psychotic, yes.
It's how you know Wendy's invested.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was, I mean, that was all of my number one, was that whole scene and just the quality of performance that Abdul-Salis is giving is just so crazy. And the fact that he, like, cut down on Perrin and cut down on Perrin and cut down it, and then he walked away and let them discuss, and then came back and, like, started cutting across, so that I imagine he was gonna start peeling off the squares of flesh that was cut out. And I was just like, oh God, that is pretty tough. But yeah, so that was it for my number one. You guys got some notes?
I had a note about Matt. He just looks awful. They all seem to know what's happening to him. He seems to know also, and so does Rand. And then he thinks he killed the family in the last episode, which
that hit me in the face pretty hard this time, because I was like, oh God, he doesn't know if he killed them, and will he ever know?
Right.
And even after a month's time too, because there is a month time jump in this episode. And even after a month, he's still wondering whether or not he killed this family. You know, so either somebody still hasn't told him yet, it wasn't him, or
Rand's told him. It sounds like Rand's told, tell me again. And then, Matt, you didn't kill the family, and you, like, it was the Fade. And, well, how do you know? And, well, Tom's dead. And, the whole idea that he can't help it, and he just, that's all he has to focus on, is tough.
And I know they seem pretty positive, like, they seem pretty convinced that Matt is turning into a conjurer or becoming a conjurer. I don't necessarily feel like I believe that, though, because, first off, to have the story where three of the five of them become conjurers, I think is a little much. I think there's something darker happening to Matt right now. And I think a lot of it stems from that dagger. Because, as I mentioned last episode, he was holding that dagger when he could look in the shadow. I think whatever it was that was taking over possession of the pretend dragon. I forget his name.
Loghain?
It's like Loghain. Thank you. Whatever it was that took possession of Loghain, I think a similar thing is happening to Matt, because Loghain looked at Matt and literally just starts laughing. Madness can sense madness.
Did he actually do that, or did Matt just picture that? Because Rand was like, Matt, question. Matt. And then you look back down. I think he was hallucinating too, because then Loghain was sitting back against the cage.
Right.
Yeah.
But you just don't know. That's the thing. You just don't know what's real, what's not real, what's just he seeing. You don't know.
Yeah, especially for him. It's, they're doing a good job of keeping even us guessing as viewers. But again, I think it's something more. I don't think he's necessarily becoming a conjurer. I think there's some kind of darkness possessing.
I don't mean to correct. I'm assuming you mean the channeler.
Channeler, yes. Sorry, not conjurer. Channeler. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Listeners at home are screaming at me right now.
Channeler.
Chandler Bing.
I was just thinking that too when
Bing.
I said it.
Bing.
I couldn't stop myself.
After I said it. Actually, it's Miss Chandler.
So any other notes?
So the white cloak guys, what are they called?
White cloaks. Children of the Light.
Children of the Light.
Children of the Light. was calling them the light men. They seem to be right outside of Tar Valon.
I had a note about that too. It seems weird that would happen so close to like the stronghold of the Aes Sedai.
Yeah, why don't they go out there and attack them? Like, they're killing, that's their whole purpose. They're killing the Aes Sedai, and this is the tower of the Aes Sedai.
And then they're just beating the shit out of Tinkers just outside the gates. And one's like, "Hey, stop that." Like,
that was my other note. Like, everything that the Children of the Light are doing, but yet they won't kill Tinkers? Why not? Is that some kind of code I don't get?
I think that's just it. I think Aram even says, when he's running away with Perrin and Egwene, he even says, like, they won't kill them. We need to go.
Yeah.
Because they do have a code. They literally are just slapping them around.
Yeah. And it seemed weird.
Defenseless people who will not defend themselves. Oh, well, I'll just knock them around a little bit because they're not doing what I tell them to do.
But I'm going to flay this other guy over here.
Yeah, it's...
It's an intimidation factor.
I mean,
just... Well, and that's just it, too. I don't know if the other Children of the Light are exactly following or even in the know of what
is this guy going
what
wrong?
Child Valda is doing.
Yeah, exactly. Were all of those guys questioners? Or were some of them just regular Children of the Light? I didn't know.
I think some of them were just Children of the Light that were there as part of like an army or a caravan that was with him. Because remember, everything he does, with the exception of the one Aes Sedai that he literally burned at the stake, everything that happens to Perrin and Egwene in this episode happens inside of a tent that he's the only one that goes into.
Right.
So I don't know if the other Children of the Light are even aware.
I mean, they hear screaming from inside the tent. I mean, like, both Egwene and Perrin are just yelling and... I mean, immediately prior to wolves, like, I guess maybe you have more concerns on your plate if wolves start ripping out your throat rather than people screaming. True. But yeah. Good notes. What's up, Ben? What you got?
So I do have a couple notes as well. Moraine's eyes and ears are horrible. Because she says to Nave, "I have eyes and ears posted at every entrance. If they arrived or they're here, I'll know about it." Really? Because you didn't. It took Loyal finding Rand Nynaeve to get the two of them together.
Nynaeve just leaves, and nobody notices that either.
Yeah. Hey, there's an Ogier who came and got the woman with the braid, and no one cares. Oh, all right. All these Aes Sedai who want me to go be a novice and whatnot, but I'm just going to go off to this inn.
And in typical Loyal fashion, he starts going into a historical tirade, and it doesn't matter because Nynaeve is just heading right towards Rand so they can catch him.
Yeah.
And he's just standing outside the door talking about something, giving you the background on something about the White Tower. Who knows what he's talking about?
Because we helped build this. We were always allowed. Okay, we literally have stopped listening, Loyal. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Is it also... just me, or does it seem like Rand is very indecisive as to whether or not he wants to trust Moraine? Because one episode he doesn't trust her, like he doesn't want to know why they're following, and then the next episode he has a nightmare about something and he wants to follow her to make sure because they're safe with her. And now in this episode it's like, well, I don't know if I trust her again. Like, will you make up your mind?
I agree. That second episode he had seemed... I don't know. Maybe they were just giving him bad direction or something. Because he seems much more steadfast and...
You're talking about when he kind of went off on her, like, what's next? What's next?
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was calculated. And the reason I say that is that after that, Moraine rides off and Matt says, well, you got a reaction out of her. So it makes me think that there's a possibility that Rand was just seeing how far he could push her
Well, no, there's another moment in that same episode where Matt and Rand are having a conversation because Matt wants to go back to the village, and Rand is the one that talks him into saying, like, no, we're safer with her. So, like, that's a moment where he trusts her, but then now he's going back on that saying, I don't know if I do.
So I think
in the White Tower where she wanted to bring you anyway, and now you don't trust her?
I think there is a fine line between making sure that you like staying with someone who you know has power till you get to a place of safety and saying, okay, well, my lot's thrown in with her and I'll do whatever she says. What if we give her to Matt or give Matt to her and tell her about him being a channeler and then they gentle him and he wants to kill himself. I feel like he is thinking about Matt and what will happen to Matt when they turn, if he tells Moraine, will she just say, oh, well, I've got my own, you know, personal, political things. So I live by a code that's in my head and I've already killed the ferryman in my mind, right? Whether the realization that she didn't kill him, it was his own actions after hers that did it. I think that to Rand, he understands, or his viewpoint is that she doesn't care about them. She cares about whatever it is, whatever her mission is, whatever the dragon reborn, and whoever is not the dragon can fuck off, basically. So,
okay.
who can he trust her to do what's best for his friends and not what she thinks is best for the White Tower?
So at the time telling Matt that he feels they're safer with her was more for the protection of Matt and his sanity than a trust in Moraine.
I would say so, I think. Yes.
Okay.
I think that was protecting enough. A friend. And now it's, I'm protecting a friend from Moraine and from the Aes Sedai because I don't know what the goals of the entire organization are.
Okay. Fair enough.
That, again, that's my viewpoint. Whenever someone brings up some, literally anything, I immediately go, what could possibly be the reason? My wife hates it when I do that.
Well, we'll just see, because maybe next episode he'll trust her again.
Oh, yeah. No, next episode he's going to, you know, sing for her and it'll be crazy.
Exactly. And the only final note I have, and this is a very quick one, I forget who it was, but we got somebody mentioned in feedback last week that was it just them or does the green Aes Sedai, the green Aja Aes Sedai in the opening look like Nynaeve? I rewatched it. It absolutely looks like Nynaeve. It is her with her braids down from that final scene of the last episode. Huh. It absolutely looks like her.
Nice.
I mean, if I had to predict things without knowing anything, which I truly have been able to stay pure, I would say it would seem obvious that Nynaeve's going to be an Aes Sedai.
That would be my guess too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That kind of makes sense.
Blends into my next note, which was about the White Tower. The White Tower does not seem to be a friendly place to be. Moraine and Lon haven't been there for 2 years, and this seems purposeful. They've avoided the place, and it's just a lot of infighting and politics and backstabbing and power grabbing. And I think that came as a surprise to me because you kind of, in the first one or two episodes, you hear Aes Sedai and these are the most powerful people in the world. And you have this lofty, you know, putting them on a pedestal. But it sounds like they're just like everything else in the world.
It feels like there's an inner circle in the White Tower. And if you're not in it, it's dangerous.
Yeah. And there's a lot of like personal egos in there.
Yeah.
And not so much altruistic I mean, just, you know, on first glance, it seems like they're not so much operating for the better good of things as much as there seems to be power grabbing going on. Moraine seems to truly want to stay out of all of this, which I think I came to see her as certainly a more, you know, a better person than a lot of the other Aes Sedai. Just, I don't know a lot about her yet, but from what I've seen. And even though Nynaeve definitely doesn't trust the Aes Sedai and she doesn't trust Moraine, Moraine really appeared to be trying to help and protect Nynaeve. I don't know that she appreciated it, but I felt like Moraine was being truthful and
yeah, just trying to help.
Genuine. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely something to keep an eye on. A couple of things that I noticed, Alana mentioned that, you know, the White Tower was not what it was when she left when Moraine left 2 years ago. The Amyrlin is coming back and, you know, is looking for people to answer for Loghain. And Leandrin and Moraine have some sort of enmity by themselves. And, you know, you have two very powerful people that aren't your friends and are not the people that you necessarily want to be on their bad side. And, you know, they're both going to be in the tower and one of them is basically your boss. So, the next episode is called The Flame of Tarvalon, and the Flame of Tarvalon is the Amyrlin Seat. So we are going to meet the Amyrlin Seat next episode, I'm assuming. Especially now since we got word that she is coming back. But yeah, that's it. A pit of vipers is what it feels like in the White Tower.
Agree. Yep, that's exactly it.
Anything else, Ben?
No, that's all the notes that I had.
All right. Just going through my notes. I like the Rand fro. You can see the length of hair that Rand has not had a haircut in a bit. So yeah.
The Rand fro. Got it.
I okay. know. I was like, what?
That's Sorry.
What
I was like. The fro that Rand had.
No, I got it.
I like Ranfro now.
Yeah. and then, oh, look, all of the models got dirty and they stayed dirty. And all these very pretty people are now all disgusting because they've been on the road for a month. Oh, Moraine, when she opened the little window into what looked like it was going to be like a safe or something like that, and it was a picture of a little girl or a woman staring into a window, I was like, what's up with that? I'm just curious what it is.
I didn't see that.
I noticed it too. Yeah.
It was right after Alana left. Like, Moraine got up basically and stood at a portion, you know, beside the door. Alana got up and left the room, the door shut, and then Moraine opened this thing and looked at this picture. Oh, I thought the throat singing at the funeral, the final.
Yeah, like the Gregorian.
Yeah.
Throat singing.
Yeah. I thought that was actually really cool. And then so the note that I put was like, the bond brings tears to Moraine's eyes. And is it sadness? Is it Land's fear of losing Moraine? Is it like, what is it? Or is it just that reflection like I was talking about of all of it? And I thought that was pretty good. Oh, man, that was a lot. All right, if that is it, we'll take a break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
And we are back with news about the Wheel of Time. So kind of what Wendy was talking about earlier, Nerdist spoke to Madeline Madden about Egwene and her experiences with the White Cloaks. When the White Cloaks capture Egwene and Perrin, they brush out Egwene's hair. It's the first time we've seen her with her hair unbraided in the series. Is that intentional symbolism, since getting one's hair braided is so important in the Two Rivers? And Madeline says, of course, absolutely symbolic. Symbolism is such a major thing in the Wheel of Time. One of the things that Robert Jordan was renowned for was his attention to detail. So we also have to pay attention to the detail as well. The scene of the White Cloak stripping Egwene and violently brushing her hair out is really disturbing. It's such a violation. She's not seen as a person. The symbolism of the braid is so important to not only the women in the Two Rivers, but to the men as well. The weight that carries of being initiated into this women's circle, and also what it represents of we are always with you, we will always stand by you. That's something that we see Nynaeve is very stoic about, her braid, and so is Egwene. So when her hair is violently brushed out, it just shows how stripped down she feels, and I guess alone and violated and naked. The Nerdist responds, yeah, that whole scene, like, hey, we're going to put you in white and make you pure so that we can torture you. And Madeline replies, yeah, exactly. The White Cloaks violently scrub her down and are very rough with her. But then when it comes to her hands, they're very gentle and clean the nails and handle them with such care for Velda. I remember reading that and being so disturbed by it.
Nerdist says, as Egwene escapes from Velda, she takes his trophies, the Aes Sedai rings. Velda's taken from severed hands. Can you tell me about Egwene pausing during this intense moment to take the great serpent rings? And Madeline says, absolutely. She's a real upholder of justice, and she feels that returning these rings to these women sisters in the White Tower is giving them a proper send-off and treating them with respect. She has such respect for the Aes Sedai and how important these rings are and what these women went through to get these rings, but then also what they went through in their final moments. I feel like her taking these rings and giving them back to the Aes Sedai is honoring what these women went through.
That, like,
I
yeah.
agree. That's great.
Egwene.
I feel better about the scenes listening to her.
Yeah, like, take. Yeah, I mean, it. Like, because yeah. the fact that they, you know, that they wrote it that way specifically to represent how violated she felt. It was just.
And she experienced it as an actress, right. You know, I'm sure, she, you know, that's impactful.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy. That's a pretty heavy scene. Now moving on to listener feedback, listener responses.
Starting off with feedback from Shay Wide. Another good episode. I think my son has a new favorite character in Loyal. Me too. the appearance is not what I pictured, but the Ogier mannerisms and way of speaking were great. We both hope Matt gets help soon. Colin was especially sad to see Stepan's fate. This combined with the torture of Egwene and Perrin made for one of the season's darker episodes. Can't believe there are only 3 more episodes.
I know, right?
That is crazy.
It went by so fast.
I know.
It's crazy because it's only been 3 weeks. Because we had the 3 episodes at first. We're just like, man, it's almost over already.
It's fast. Yeah, it's 6 weeks. That's fast.
Yeah.
It feels like we got caught up just for the show to end.
Yeah.
Yep. Penny Lennox says, hi, Wendy, Greg, and Ben. So glad to be joining you for this journey. The podcast has been great at helping get settled in this new world. Writing in to say RIP, Stepan. This episode was full of grief and pain, and I was so caught up in the characters and their different reactions to pain and guilt. Lon and Stepan scenes were so real and grounded. I could see myself in both of them as I reflected on my own experiences of grief, my own and others. Sometimes a person seems strong and like they have the grief under control, but probably he had already decided to kill himself, so he was peaceful. I mean, he drugged Lon at the beginning of the conversation, then had the goodbye he wanted, like Bob on Walking Dead. He didn't want to spend his remaining time fighting or crying. That funeral was beautiful. The light, all from a single source, like late afternoon light on all those rough stone textures and white raw textiles, was both soothing and sad. The chest thing and the tears, all very affecting. I really hope Eamon is alive. She stabbed him in the shoulder, so I'm sure he's going to survive. I love everything about the character. The performance by Abdul Salis is mesmerizing. The costumes are luxurious and pious at the same time, and he's legitimately scary. Cheers and happy winter holidays. Thank you, Penny.
That was beautifully put, Penny.
Yes.
And yeah, Eamon is, Lugvalda is just, he's going to be alive so that we can watch him die eventually.
I know he's alive. Yeah, I want to watch him die. I look forward to that.
If I cosplayed as a child of the light at a con, I wonder how many people would get it.
I mean, now, nowadays?
I don't know, but I'd stay away from you.
Just walk through the con with like five or six people in white cloak gear. Yeah.
And if I see somebody who looks like a witch of some kind, I just like...
Burn her!
Pull them aside.
All right.
Chop off your hands.
Yeah. Off with the hands. Rings. And light you on fire. All right. And we have one call from Mr. Steve Brown. Looking forward to this.
Hello, House Podcastica. This is Steve. And this is going to be for Wheel of Time Season 1, Episode 5. Those seem like really shallow graves. Is that maybe just because the ground is so frozen still and stuff? Okay, so it's 1 month later, so they didn't want to show us the trip. I was kind of looking forward to seeing the walking. I'm not going to say what the White Tower looks like with those two lumps at the bottom and standing straight up. Since there's a White Tower, do you think there's a Dark Tower? Get it? The Dark Tower? Whoa, dude, you just slapped her across the face, man. That's mean. Like they're nonviolent, you know? Ooh, they didn't get very far, because now they've been tracked down with the horses. I like this Ogier. I'm not going to try to say his name, though. But what's the Ioman? Yeah, I think you guys were talking about the bond between the Aes Sedai and her warders. And yeah, this guy. I'm going to catch my throat just thinking about like the struggle he has here of what he's going to do now. Steppen. Ooh, Perrin's eyes just like changed color when that guy started cutting on him. I wonder what that means. Wait a minute. At what point did he tell her, did he tell the Ogier he was looking for Nynaeve? What? Something just happened off screen, or did I miss something? Ooh, his eyes changed color again, and you can hear the dogs in the background. Is she going to channel? Whoa, I guess the wolves are kind of protecting him now. Oh, and that one wolf just, oh. Oh, sad kind of ending, but, All right, can't wait to hear you guys talk about this one.
Yeah, To answer your question, Steve, I think that that Loial and Rand had conversations off screen, Phil. Oh, hey, Loial, you're gonna talk and you're gonna listen. there's definitely some good stuff in there.
And boo to the Light Tower, White Tower, Dark Tower reference. See what I did there? Dark Tower.
Thanks so much, Steve. That was fantastic.
Always great.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate you guys calling in and all the feedback that we get. We're kind of recording on a short timetable this week, and I don't necessarily know that we got that out too early. So that's on us. But we want to make sure to try to get this out for you as soon as possible after the episode.
And if you do have feedback for this episode that you didn't get in time, send it anyway. And as I know, Wendy posted in the Podcastica page that if you have feedback, we'll read it next week.
Yeah, absolutely. We love hearing from you guys and passing on all of your awesome insight. And so thus ends the fifth episode on the Wheel of Time. If you'd like to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email it to talk@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And we are also on Twitter @podcastica.
So awesome things on Podcastica. I know Wendy is up to date on all things Strange Indeed. What are they covering over there, Wendy?
So they made me watch Midnight Mass, and now they're making me watch Lock and Key. I will voluntarily watch Dexter, so I'm watching Dexter. I mean, they're just knocking it out of the park. Great British Bake Off is just finished. I really enjoy it. That show is just amazing this season. It's such a palate cleanser because they're all so sweet to each other.
Although I think, and I think The Holiday Bake just released on Netflix too.
Oh, really?
For Christmas, yeah.
I don't think I've seen any of those, so that's something I can spend time doing.
I don't know if they're covering them on Strange Indeed or not. I think they're just covering the main season.
Yeah. Lock and Key is great. Like, I really didn't think I'd like that show, and then again they made me watch it, so I had to go watch it, and it's been great. I'm completely caught up now. I like binged it.
I really enjoy Lock and Key, and their coverage of it's one of my favorite ones too. I look forward to it every week. On I think it's Thursdays it comes out, the Strange Indeed gets published, and I look forward to hearing their coverage so that I can go watch the next one, because I really want to hear them talk about stuff before I watch the next episode.
Yeah, I don't watch the next episode till after I listen. Dexter is really good. Somebody said something that I thought it was 100% certain that Dexter was just one more season. But somebody said something that, no, they might be doing a few seasons. So that kind of was exciting.
Oh, I mean, yeah, if you're a Dexter fan, then...
But I thought they said this was it. They were ending it the right way, one season. But I don't know.
I thought that's what I had heard, too, was that this was literally just a short reprieve.
Yeah.
Just to kind of continue the story a little bit, and then that was going to be it.
I thought Rima said on the show that she thought they might be more than one season. Hmm. So that's kind of exciting. I hope so. I hope I'm wrong, but I had thought it was going to be one season.
I think Rima just hopes there's another season.
I bet.
And then I think Walking Dead cast is in a little bit of a hiatus with the end of World Beyond and...
Fear.
Did the Fear season, was that a complete season or was it a mid-season finale?
Okay. People wish it was the season finale, but it was only the mid-season finale.
Got it.
I did post on the Patreon group that it was the season finale. I think that was wishful thinking on my part, but it is the mid-season.
Wishful thinking is hoping it's the series finale.
They should have ended it at the end of last season. I'm just saying, like, go out with a bang. And I think that's all we got going on right now until Cobra Kai and Book of Boba Fett comes out on this podcast.
Which they're coming up in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Yeah, they're coming up. Because, Book of Boba Fett, I think, is 25th. And, Book of Boba Fett is the 29th, and Cobra Kai is the 31st. So Jason and Rima are going to be busy.
They're going to be real busy.
Especially Rima with Strange Indeed still happening, too, depending on what they're covering.
Well, I think Lock and Key will be done by then. Or actually, it'll be real close. Yeah, they're going to be busy.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, next time on this podcast, The Wheel of Time, Season 1, Episode 6, The Flame of Tar Valon.
And you'll be down one member.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we are going to have a special guest coming in next week. I have to confirm it and make sure that it works out for who we're getting. But we will have a guest host next week because Ben will not be able to join us, unfortunately.
I will be out of town next week.
So, all right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Let the dragon ride again on the winds of time.
That's so awesome.
Wendy does it so much better.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.